Isaiah, as a book, is the most quoted book in the Old Testament. You find more often than New Testament writers pull passages out of Isaiah than any other book in the Old Testament. Isaiah's name means Yahweh is salvation. And it's a good summary of what Isaiah is about. It's the fact that God is our salvation. He's often called the Messianic prophet because of how much the Messiah is mentioned and described in these prophecies. In fact, take a look at John chapter 12. John chapter 12, and in verse 41, John 12 and verse 41, so these things Isaiah said because he saw his glory and he spoke of him. Isaiah saw and knew about the coming Messiah. He may not have understood everything that he prophesied, but he talked about it. And that's why it's mentioned so often in the New Testament. Now, the book has two distinct sections in the Isaiah. There's one section that runs from chapters 1 up to 39. And there's another section that runs from chapter 40 up to chapter 66. The two sections are so distinct that has often led people to speculate, to claim that Isaiah was written by two different people. But there's really no reason for that. The first 39 chapters focuses on the past and on the presence of Israel. And the last 27 chapters focus on the future. But if you read through it, the style of writing is very much the same, other than the focus of the topic. That's really what all the difference between the two sections are. The reason why, though, people want to say there's two different authors is because this last section, because they can't really deny the fact Isaiah was written in Isaiah's time frame, in Hezekiah's and earlier. But this last section contains some prophecies that really, if you accept it, are unfathomable. Because in Isaiah chapter 44, and in verse 28, Isaiah 44 and verse 28, says, "It is I who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. He will perform all my desire. He declares of Jerusalem, she will be built, and of the temple your foundations will be laid." Cyrus is the king of the Medes. At the time that Isaiah was written, Assyria was the dominant empire. Isaiah, in fact, mentions the fact that Assyria was about to wipe out Israel, northern Israel, and did do so during Isaiah's time frame. But then that empire was wiped out by the Babylonians. That empire was wiped out by the Medes. And Isaiah is saying 150 years beforehand, Cyrus, he names the king of the Medes, is going to rebuild Jerusalem. You know, people have such a hard time with that because that's such a strong proof of God's prophecies and God's inspiration and God's power, that they want to say, well, wait a minute, this was written by Isaiah, this was written by some later author who tacked it on, in writing in the style of Isaiah, but he was writing after the fact, trying to get around that evidence. Another passage also is Isaiah 45. It also says, "Thus the Lord said that Cyrus is anointed. I have taken by right hand to subdue nations before him and to loose the loins of kings, to open doors before him so that the gates will not be shut." Cyrus is named. See, they can't explain Isaiah's detailed prophecies. And so they seek some other type of explanation. But what they can't get around is that Isaiah was written long before Christ came. And like I said, Isaiah is the most quoted book in the Old Testament. And it has prophecies about the Messiah. The oldest copy that we have of Isaiah dates 200 years before Christ. It's not when Isaiah was actually written, but we have a physical copy that dates 200 years before Christ. Even at that time frame, no one could get that much detail right. Now, one of the things you might take notice of is, and I didn't realize this, this never dawned on me until I was reading through a book called Talk Through the Bible by Bruce Wilkinson. He points out, well, Isaiah has 66 chapters. Well, your Bibles have 66 books. And the first 39 books deal with the Old Testament, the past. And the 27 later books deal with the Messiah and the future. And so, interesting enough, Isaiah is a map of the Bible. It has 66 books, or chapters. First 39 chapters deal with righteousness, holiness, justice of God, Israel's just condemnation. Just like the 39 books of the Old Testament. The last 27 chapters deal with God's glory and His compassion. It discusses the Messiah's role in salvation and gives a message of hope. Just like the 27 chapters, or 27 books of the New Testament. It's an interesting little side book. So it makes it easier to remember if you ever get trivia, how many chapters are in Isaiah. Now, Isaiah's work as a prophet covers about 40 years. He spans the reigns of four different kings in Judah. In fact, it's mentioned in Isaiah chapter 1, and in verse 1, Bible to flip over there. Isaiah 1 verse 1, it says, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, concerning Judah and Jerusalem, he saw during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. He actually lives past Hezekiah, but his main prophecies were done during those four kings' reigns. His work as a prophet centered around the city of Jerusalem. He lived in Jerusalem. Most of his work was done in Jerusalem. He started near the end of Uzziah's reign. He continues through Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah's reign. In fact, in Isaiah chapter 37, Isaiah 37 in verse 38, it says, and it came about that as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroth, his god, that Amram, Melechet, and Sisera, his sons, killed him with the sword, and they escaped into the land of Ariat. And Esharishadan, his son, became king in his place. That king, which was named Amram Chariot, is actually... we know him as Sennacherib. And we know that death occurred 5 years after Hezekiah's death. So we know that Isaiah, at least his reign or his prophecies and his discussions go into the first few years of Manasseh reign as well. What else we know about Isaiah is that he was from the upper class of Judah. In fact, Jewish tradition says that he was a cousin of King Uzziah. That might explain also his access oftentimes to the kings, if he was a cousin of one of the of Uzziah. His wife also was a prophetess. He was a prophet. His wife was a prophetess in Isaiah chapter 8. And in verse 3, it says, so I approached the prophetess, and she conceived and gave birth to a son. Then the Lord said to me, name him Mehar Shahal Hashbash, for before this boy knows how to cry out, my father or my mother, the wealth of Damascus and the spoils of Samaria will be carried away before the king of Assyria. We know that he had at least two sons, because one's mentioned here in this verse, but also in chapter 7, verse 3, it says, then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out now and meet Ahaz, you and your son, Shear-Jashub, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool, and on the highway of this fuller's field, and say to him, take care and be calm, have no fear, and do not be faint-hearted, because these two stubs of smoldering firebrands, on account of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram, the sons of Ramallah. And it goes on with the discussion of the prophecies. But it names his other son. He might have had more, but we at least know these two were mentioned by name. Jewish tradition, which is not inspired, but in Jewish tradition, it does mention that Isaiah was sawn in two by Manasseh. Manasseh, when he started his reign, was very wicked. And if that's true, then that probably who was mentioned in Hebrews 11, verse 37, when it says some were sawn in two. There was a Jewish tradition that it was Isaiah who was sawn in two. Isaiah also was probably among the prophets who recorded events in 1 Kings and 2 Kings. And because 2 Chronicles 26, 2 Chronicles 26, and in verse 22, 2 Chronicles 26, verse 22, it says, now the rest of the acts of Isaiah, first to the last, the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, has written. And also in chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles, and in verse 32, now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah and his deeds of devotion, behold, they are written in the visions of Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. So basically, the one who wrote Chronicles mentions, oh, by the way, Isaiah is the one who recorded at least these events in the books of the kings, which will be our first and second kings. Now, about 150 years before Isaiah occurred, Assyria, as we mentioned, was a dominant empire. It was expanding its borders. It's an ancient kingdom that was around for about 3,000 years. And early in Isaiah's life, Israel was carried away into captivity by Assyria. And it took about 13 years for Israel to fall. Assyria then threatened Judah, but it was stopped by an angel of God at Jerusalem. And even after his withdrawal, it remained a threat basically for Isaiah's whole life. And he lived his life with that looming empire that at any moment probably could come down and just squash Judah. There was really no reason why Judah kept existing, in a sense, if you look politically, because Assyria had wiped out everything around Judah. It had reached all the way down to the borders of Egypt. There was really no reason why it didn't just squish Judah instead of just leaving in the middle. It wasn't his normal policy anyway. But it didn't. But there was always this threat that it could have happened. So let's talk about exactly what does occur. We can divide Isaiah, like I said, most people divide in two parts. I think it's better to divide in three. Because from Isaiah chapter 1 to verse, or chapter 1 to chapter 35, talks about the past. And the condemnation that comes upon Israel because of the past. Then from 36 to 39 is the present. And then from 40 to 66 is the future. And that's a rough, very, very, very rough outline of Isaiah. So let's talk about them in more details. Starting with chapters 1 through 12 of Isaiah. Then, what we have is a condemnation of Judah. In chapter 1, Isaiah talks about how wicked Judah is. That basically summarizes the entire book, sets the scene for what's happening. Judah is deep in sin. But God invites them to repent because this is their only hope of avoiding judgment. Then from chapters 2 to 4, he talks about the day of the Lord. This is the day that God is going to do something about the fact that Judah is in sin. Chapter 5 is a parable. It's usually referred to as the parable of the vineyard. It's an interesting chapter because it's written in a style that is in Israel. The style is that of a funeral dirge. It's a psalm. It's actually a tune. But it's written into a funeral tune. And again, Judah's sins are listed and the judgment that would result from it. In chapter 6 of Isaiah, then we have Isaiah's commission as a prophet. He's told, he's actually may have been prophesied before, but this is the actual commission of his prophecy. Then starting from Isaiah 7 to chapters 10, verse 4, is a record of Assyria's destruction of Israel. But what's interesting then is from chapters 10, verse 5, down through verse 19, is God's a prophecy about God destroying Assyria as a result. And then starting with chapter 10, verse 20, going all the way to the end of chapter 12, he talks about the remnant and the restoration. So basically, in chapters 1 through 12, we got a complete history of Judah. Their sins, their wickedness, the fact that God warns them he's going to judge them, the blame it of the fact that they were going to be judged, and then we get to the actual destruction of Israel, God's promise of destroying the Assyrians, and the promise that the people would come back and be restored. All condensed in 12 chapters. So this is all about Israel's sins, Judah's sins. Their condemnation and the restoration. Then chapters 13 to 23 is a condemnation of the nations. The first 12 chapters focus on Israel because that's the prime focus of God. But the next set of chapters talks about all the various nations around Israel and their condemnation. In chapters 13 and 14, he talks about Babylon, Assyria, and Philistia. He says that Assyria would be overthrown. Take a look at Isaiah 14, verse 25. Isaiah 14, verse 25. It says, "To break Assyria in my land, I will trample him on my mountains. Then his yoke will be removed from them, and his burden removed from their shoulders." So he promises Assyria would be broken. In chapter 13, he talks about the Babylonians the Medes who come after Babylon. He talks about the Babylonians. Chapter 13, verse 17, it says, "Behold, I'm going to stir up the Medes against them, who will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. And their bows will mow down the young men, and they will not even have compassion on the fruit of the womb, nor will their eye pity children. And Babylon, the beauty of the kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah." So you notice in this chapter, we got a prediction. Assyria, which is currently the dominant power, is wiping out everything. It's at its peak, it's at its heyday. Farthest borders it's ever had. Isaiah says, it's going to be overthrown. In the same basic section, it says, and we know later with the Babylonians who wipe out Assyria. In that same chapter, it says, oh, the Babylonians are going to be wiped out. He even tells you what nation is going to wipe them out, the Medes. And starting with, now it goes beyond that. Not only just that they're wiped out, notice how thoroughly they're wiped out. He says it's going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah. Take a look at verse 20. It will never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation, nor will the arrow pitch his tent there, nor will shepherds make their flocks lie down there, but desert creatures will lie down there, and their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches will also live there, and shaggy goats will frolic there. Hyenas will howl in their fortified towers, and jackals in their luxurious palaces. Her fateful time also will soon come, and her days will not be prolonged. So thoroughly wiped out that no one would ever live there again. You know what? It's still true today. That's how thoroughly it was wiped out. Now think about that. We talked about this last time, though, a couple weeks ago. Think about what that means. Somebody who's talking about events 150 to 200 years in advance. It would be basically on the order of saying, hey, you know, the United States is going to be wiped out. Oh, and that kingdom, and names the kingdom that comes after it. Oh, and they're going to be wiped out, and names the one that comes after that one. And oh, by the way, the second one's going to be never inhabited again. It's going to be totally wiped out. And it stands true for 3,000, basically 3,000 years. Now tell me what a human book can do that. In chapter 14, by the way, also about Babylon being wiped out. And in verse 22 it says, I will rise up against them, declares the Lord of hosts, and will cut off Babylon's name and survivors, offspring and prosperity, says the Lord. I will also make it a possession for the hedgehog and the swamps of water. And I will sweep it with the broom of destruction, declares the Lord of hosts. Now, with chapter 15 and 16, he talks about the destruction of Moab. In chapter 17, he talks about Damascus and Samaria. 18, he goes all the way down into Africa and talks about Ethiopia. Chapters 19 and 20, he talks about the destruction of Egypt. 21, he goes back to talking about Babylon, and he also then talks about Edom and Arabia. Chapter 22, he talks about Jerusalem again. And in chapter 23, he talks about what happens to Tyre. All these are detailed prophecies about what would happen to all these other kingdoms. And they're fascinating because they all come true. Now you might claim, well, hey, you know, Isaiah lives in Jerusalem. He would know, and he's a relative to the king. He would know about all the politics that goes on in Jerusalem, and might be able to make some really good guesses about some of the near future. But he's talking about extended nations all around the world, and their futures as well. Isaiah chapter 24 to 27. Returns again to this idea of the day of the Lord. In chapter 24, it talks about the judgment God's going to bring. Chapters 25 through 26 talks about God's triumph. And chapter 26 is actually an answer to chapter 5, which was the funeral dirge about the vineyard that was going to be trampled. 27 talks about the revival of that vineyard. Now I'm going really fast through these chapters, but there's 66 chapters to cover. I'm trying to do this in one evening. So I'm trying to do this as a summary. Chapters 28. Should get it written down here. So 24 to 27 is the day of the Lord. In other words, God's judgment. So starting with chapters 28. And going up to chapter 35, I typed on my lesson here. 28 to 35, then is a series of woes and blessings. There are six woes that are pronounced for very specific sins that are being committed. In chapter 28, there's woes that are given to Samaria and Jerusalem. 29 focuses on Jerusalem and gives another woe to Jerusalem. One thing that's interesting in here is that Jerusalem is called Ariel. You look at 29, you say, where's Jerusalem mentioned? Well, Jerusalem's meant called Ariel in chapter 29. Ariel means Lion of God. And oh, by the way, it originally was a male name. Somehow, as time gone on, it has become a female name, but in our country. But it is actually a male name, which means Lion of God. Chapters 30 to 31 is a woe to the Egyptian alliance. He prophesies the fact that they were going to try to rely on Egypt to rescue them from the Assyrians and the Babylonians. And Isaiah says, don't do it, it won't work. In chapter 32, he talks about the coming king. In chapter 33, he talks about woe on Assyria. Chapter 34 is a woe on Edom. And then chapter 35, again, he goes back to the Messiah and talks about the coming kingdom. So interspersed into these woes, you got a series of woes, but oh, by the way, the Messiah is coming. A series of woes, oh, by the way, the kingdom's coming. So it's a mixture of woes and blessings. Now, as I mentioned, chapter 36 through 39 is talking about the present of Isaiah's time. It's the history of the present. He talks about in 36 or 37 about Hezekiah's rescue from the Assyrians. The Assyrians came down. They had wiped out Israel. Now they're ready to wipe out Jerusalem. They had wiped out most of Judah. They had siege of Jerusalem, and then God answered Hezekiah's prayer, sent one angel, and wiped out 185,000 of Assyria's army overnight. Scared them so bad they ran back off. They didn't claim that. You actually read their records, they just decided to withdraw. They don't really say why they decided to pull back. But the Bible reveals that they were so scared because of what happened, they pulled back. Isaiah 38 talks about Hezekiah's sickness, where he was told he was going to die. And God, it is prayer that he would recover and that he was given 15 more years. And that's when also he was given a sign with the sun movement so that he would know that he would be recovered. But Isaiah 39 then talks about Hezekiah's sin. He did recover. He made a major mistake. He showed off the treasures in Judah to some Babylonian representatives. Now, at Hezekiah, you got to remember, at Hezekiah's day, the Assyrians were the heads. Babylon representatives was just this minor kingdom off on the side. In fact, they had been conquered by the Assyrians. They were tributes are underneath the Assyrians. And so probably Hezekiah didn't think anything about, you know, this was just another kingdom, and it's way up, you know, on the other side of Euphrates, farther than Assyria is from them. He probably wasn't thinking there was anything that bad about it, and he was just showing off what he had. And Isaiah said, or God said through Isaiah, hey, because you did this, now you just set up the pattern for Jerusalem's destruction. And Hezekiah's reaction is kind of odd. He basically says, well, if that's what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen. Basically, he took the attitude of saying, well, can't undo what I just did, so, oh well. Starting with chapter 40, though, is the part that talks about the future. In chapters 40 to 48 is a section that discusses the fact that Israel would be delivered. So in chapter 40, it talks about the fact that Israel is going to be delivered, and it talks about God's character. Because this is really not about Israel, this is about God. Israel sinned, they got what they deserved. The fact that God was going to rescue Israel and deliver them, tells us about God's character. In Isaiah 41, it talks about God's greatness. In Isaiah 42, he talks about God's servant, which is the Messiah, which is Jesus, and how that was going to fit in with God's plans. Isaiah 43 to 44 talks about the restoration of Israel. Isaiah 45 talks about how God's going to use Cyrus to restore Israel. And Isaiah 46 to 48 talks about how God's going to destroy Babylon, even though God used Babylon to destroy the Assyrians. Then starting with Isaiah 49 to 57, we have a section that talks about Israel's. This is about Israel's deliverance. This next section, from 49 to 57, is about Israel's deliverer. In other words, about the Messiah. In chapter 49 is a discussion about what the Messiah's mission would be. Chapter 50 talks about how he was going to be obedient to God. From chapter 51 to 52, verse 12, is his encouragement that he would make and give. From 52:13 down to end of 53 is about his atonement. In 54 is his promise to restore Israel. In chapter 55 through the beginning of 56, 56 verse 8, is his invitation to the world to come to him. And in from 56 verse 9 down to the end of 57 is his rebuke of the wicked. If you actually read through these sections, we looking at it, reading from hindsight, see how it all ties in. And it's fulfilled in Christ. The Israelites, when they're reading it, you have to understand, when they read it, it was very confusing to them. Because it talks about his deliverer, but it also talks about his death. And it talks about how he's, you know, how triumphant he's going to be, and it talks about his sorrows and woes. It got to the point where the Israelites basically had finally decided there have to be two people. They're kind of intertwining these prophecies, because it was just too, you know, back and forth. But it's all about the Messiah. Then from Isaiah 58, now to the end of the book, chapter 66, we talk about the glorious future. So in chapter 58, Isaiah talks about the blessings of true worship. In 59, he talks again about Israel's sins. But in 60, he talks about the glory of the kingdom. In 61, he talks about the Messiah. In 62, he talks about Jerusalem's future. The beginning of chapter 63, from verses 1 to 6, he talks about God's vengeance. But from the rest of that chapter down to the end of chapter 64, he talks about the prayer of the remnant. Then in chapter 65, again at the beginning from 1 to 16, he talks about that the God's answer to that prayer. So before that, it was the remnant's prayer. The next section is God's answer to that prayer. And then from 65, verse 17, to the end of chapter 66, it talks about the glorious end. Very, very, very quick summary, but I managed to do that at the appropriate time. I know it was quick overview, but Isaiah is a really remarkable book because of its grand prophecies, its well-documented place in history. See, Isaiah is the prophet of the redemption of God's people. The fact that they were so sinful that God destroyed them, but God brought them back. And what glory that was. And the glory that was given to us as a people, and a promise of heaven in the future. All recorded in this one book. Hope you'll think about the things we've talked here tonight. I'd like to offer an opportunity, if there's anyone here who's not a child of God, to become one. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, and would like the prayers of the brethren on the behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing this song selectively.